Hello, everyone. Welcome. This is Cindy Silva, and I'm so pleased to be here hosting Josephine Lang for Step Into Magic. Thank you for tuning in. I see we have people tuning in on the web, and it's so great to have your presence. Josephine is a medical intuitive, and during her long career as a medical intuitive, she's become well-versed in the healing arts. She's been an active explorer of self-development and has helped numerous friends and students, both privately and in workshops, to harness the remarkably transformative power of the subconscious mind. And in addition, Josephine is just a wonderful addition to the community, and I would say a hidden gem, and she's emerging now with a new book coming on the market soon, we hope, and I hope we hear something about that tonight. And I'd love to have you come forward, Josephine, and say hello to our audience and share your wonderful prayer with us.
Thank you, Cindy, so much. I'm so grateful to be here. I can't tell you all how wonderful this is for me. I just feel so blessed, and I really feel like it's part of stepping into the magic of my own life, and I'm just so grateful. And I would like to begin our program today with sharing a beautiful spiritual blessing. This was given to me by my dear friend Jana Massey, and I'd love for you all to listen to it and hopefully agree to it. It goes like this. Together we agree that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree? Thank you so much.
I can, yes.
Yeah, I can too. So what I would like to, today's show is about self-love, and self-love is really a key foundational piece for a life that is lived with beauty and joy, and it really is the starting point. And before I really came into self-love, I had a sort of an ethic of work hard, play hard, sleep hard, and, you know, in my teens and early 20s, and I had a gardening business, and I, you know, loved life with gusto, but life can time, and one day mine did, and I broke my back, and it was a very difficult experience, and I wound up having to spend a year in bed. And life is a school, and we often will have different teachers in our school, and some of us have the teacher of relationship issues. Maybe we have to go through a divorce or a parting of ways or death or any number of losses that we can experience. Some of us have the very fine instructor of financial difficulties, and we learn a lot through those experiences as well. My teacher has tended to be, as a pattern throughout my life, injuries, and I've had some whoppers, and that back injury was no exception. And I'm not much of a television watcher or, you know, too much of engaged in media. So I basically set up three different places around the house where I could lay down because I just didn't want to go with the option of pins and surgeries and those kind of choices. And I just knew from deep within myself that if I really gave my body the chance to heal, it would. And that's true for so many things. Our bodies, it's our body's nature to heal. And given half a chance, often it will. And so I began a study on, you know, how to heal myself, not only through self-care like massage, and Frank helped me so much with that, or dietary changes or herbs or holistic remedies, but I also learned how to heal myself by healing my mind. And in our culture, we're so often taught to not love ourselves. We're taught that we're born in sin and that we're not beautiful. And yet I see ourselves as the other teaching, which is that we're created in the image of the divine. And so in order to learn how to really embrace that part of ourselves, we need to learn how to love ourselves. And so I began with affirmations, and I would, you know, spend some time reading in one place around the house, and then I would go and do affirmations on a massage table, and I'd go lie down, and maybe I'd watch a video or something. But it was a great opportunity for me to really dive in deep and to read some of those many books that I had, you know, thought that I would read someday, and they'd all piled up and I never got to them. And there they all were waiting for me when that occurred. And I began a wonderful journey into self-growth and self-development. And perhaps the number one key teacher in my life for that is Louise Hay, with her beautiful book, You Can Heal Your Life. And this book has sold 40 million copies. And, you know, I've heard her say, and it's true, that's not advertising. You know, that's just a very darn good book. And I recommend that book to absolutely everyone that comes to me with any kind of trouble or difficulty that happens on the emotional plane, because this is really a life changer. And the way that we do that is through positive affirmations. And so, Cindy, maybe you can change to the second slide for us. And you'll see there a picture with some beautiful sailboats, and Frank has put this together for me. I think it looks very lovely. And it says, positive affirmations said with feeling hold the key to self-love. And feeling really is the key here. And I've heard Louise Hay say that, you know, if we are thinking a negative thought about ourselves, like, oh, I'm so stupid, or oh, I can't do what, I'm never awful at this, then, you know, if we're doing that all day long, and then we take our 3 minutes in the afternoon to say our positive affirmations, yes, I'm a good, you know, at technology, and I'm a good organizer, and we don't have a lot of feeling in that, well, that's not going to equal the same as the weight of those negative self-talk ideas that we've said all day to ourselves. So we really do need to really work on getting the habit established in our mind for positive thought and for positive ways of looking at ourselves. And that does take practice. And the more of the deep emotion that we can imbue into our thoughts about ourselves, the more effective they are. We all have beautiful aspects of ourselves, and part of that is our subconscious mind, which is listening to every thought we have all the time and dutifully following instructions. And it's our beloved subconscious mind that needs to make these kind of changes with us. And so another book that has been very key in my life is by Serge Kahili King. And his book is titled Mastering Your Hidden Self. And that's a wonderful book about how to get in deep into the part of ourselves that is hesitant or reticent to make these changes, and it's just trying to help us. It's just trying to do what it was dutifully told, maybe in childhood or otherwise. And so that's another way that I think we can really help to overcome this negative self-talk and to move into self-love. So now maybe, Cindy, you could change to the third slide for us. So this slide says, release the outmoded paradigm of shame, blame, and guilt, and embrace the new paradigm of love, respect, and allowance. And I got that beautiful little trio of love, respect, and allowance from a magazine that I used to read in the 90s when I was doing some of my healing work on myself, and it was called Spirit Speaks, and it was a beautiful magazine, and that was at the beginning of the magazine, Love, Respect, and Allowance. And I thought, wow, that's really where it's at. And so often culturally we've been conditioned into thoughts and feelings of shame and blame and guilt. You know, that's sort of how our families often, you know, well-meaning as they may have been, raised us. You know, in my family it was felt at that time when I was growing up that if you were too complimentary to the children, it would go to their heads and their egos would be too large. But there are other ways of raising children that I've heard of, too, which are very effective. I heard one parent say that he believed that all of his children were geniuses and raised them accordingly. And what a beautiful thing that is. And I think that that is happening more and more across the globe, that we're really being able to see our beauties instead of focusing on that which is wrong.
I love that idea.
Isn't that great? I love it too. So, and I feel that we are the generation of change. We, you know, there is some astrologers that I've heard talk about how something like about 15 or 20 years ago, there was a particular aspect that occurred in the sky. And some of these aspects that happen astrologically take a long, long time to come in and to move out. And it was one of those longer lasting ones. And it was sort of like everything that's been sort of swept under the rug is going to come forward. And a lot of things really have. I mean, there's so many changes that have happened. Patterns, family patterns that have been in place for who knows how many generations, perhaps even hundreds of generations. Alcoholism or childhood sexual abuse, those kinds of problems. So many of those have come out of the closet in our generation. And I think that's the result of some of that change that took place astrologically. And so I'm very, very grateful to be alive right now and a part of this great moving and changing that we are experiencing in humanity. So with that, I'd like to move on to the next slide, which is the fourth slide. And this is a beautiful quote by Louise Hay, and it's in her book, You Can Heal Your Life. And I've just taken the first part of it and the end part. She has it throughout each chapter. And it goes like this. In the infinity of life where I am, all is perfect, whole, and complete. All is well in my world. And I think that's a really wonderful affirmation for us to really hold on to. And with that, I'd like to share with you just a few other affirmations because I think that affirmations can really help us to heal. And so I'll just say these, and I'd love for you to just let them flow over you. The first one is one that my friend, my dear friend Lee Lawson told me about, and this is one of her affirmations every day that she says. And she wrote another wonderful book. It's one of my favorites. It's called Visitations from the Afterlife. And this affirmation goes like this. I love my life, and my life loves me. Isn't that beautiful? Here's another one, and this one came to me after a dream. My feet are always falling steadfastly on my path before me. Maybe I'll say it again. My feet are always falling steadfastly on my path before me. That's a beautiful one about trusting ourselves. And here's another one very similar to Lee's. I love my partner and my partner loves me. I love my partner and my partner loves me. This one is another beautiful one. Love is everywhere. I am loved, loving, and lovable. Love is everywhere. I am loved, loving, and lovable. This one is a little bit of a broader perspective. Humanity is manifesting its higher self for the benefit of all life. Isn't that a nice thought? Humanity is manifesting its higher self for the benefit of all life. And then this last one I'll share with you today is, I forgive myself for anything that separates me from love. I forgive myself for anything that separates me from love. So one of the things that Louise Hay teaches is to use the mirror. And I have done this many times. In fact, when I first took up practice of meditation, I would sit on my massage table in front of a little china hutch that I have in the massage room. And there is a mirror above the hutch there. And often late at night by candlelight or during the day, whenever, and I could sit there and I could gaze deeply into my own eyes. And there's something very, very magical about that. I mean, we do that every day. We do it when we brush our teeth and when we brush our hair, but to do it with loving gazing, to look into our own eyes. And then Louise advises that we say, I love you. I really love you. And having a practice of being able to, of doing that every day, often, you know, many times a day if you can, when you're first learning how to really love yourself and to let go of that old societal programming of you know, conditional love of the self. Like when I first started, it was like, well, I'll love myself when I lose 30 pounds, but not a moment before, you know, sort of a strict mindset that wasn't very functional, really. And now I love myself just exactly as I am. And that's really where we want to get. We want to get to that place where we love ourselves just exactly as we are. And a very wise and dear friend of mine, Mary, shared with me that this exercise was difficult for her to look into the mirror and say that. So what she could say was, I am willing to love myself. And so if it is hard for you to do, to look into the mirror and to say, I love myself, I'm going to look into your eyes and say, I love you just exactly the way you are. If that is hard to do, maybe you can say, I am willing to love you. And that's a great place to start if it is difficult. And self-love really is the foundation for the development of our psychic ability. Because if we don't love ourselves enough to give ourselves what we'd really like in the world, then we can't be listening to our inner guidance and our messages that come to us. So with this slide that we're on right now, in the infinity of life where I am, all is perfect, whole, and complete, all is well in my world, this is about faking it till you make it. That's how we do it. We fake it till we make it, and we work at it. So maybe, Cindy, now you could change to the next slide.
Sure. Yeah, I love that idea, fake it till you make it, because it really employs the imagination, which is another part of our psychic gifts, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. That is the clairvoyant center, you know, that third eye where we see what are the possibilities are in our life, where we let our imagination roll into these new perspectives. That's how we make the changes.
Mm.
So there's that... Go ahead.
I just love that you're tying this together, that our self-love is connected to our ability to really develop our psychic gifts. I don't think I've ever heard any other teacher really combine them, but it seems like they're intricately woven together. Common sense, when you mention it, it's like, yeah, that's common sense, but I've never heard it pulled apart and communicated that way. So I think it's really helpful to me personally, and I know a lot of people on the network that would resonate with that as well. So thank you for bringing it to our attention that way. It's just a little bit different angle to look at it, but it makes a whole big difference.
Yes, it does, and thank you so much. And I really find that this is why my book is called Step Into Magic, because this is what creates the magic in our life. And you know, Esther Hicks has done that beautiful work on manifestation. And she says that the three steps of manifestation are that first, we need to realize and ask for our desire. And that when we do that, we send out our request to the universe. And when we send that out, we have just engaged the great spiritual law of asking and receiving. And then and we use that with our clairvoyant center. We are sending out our desire. We are thinking of what it is. We ask for it. We send it out. The great spiritual law is engaged, and then the universe immediately creates that reality for us as a potentiality. But then the third step, because the second step is the universe responding and immediately creating our desire. But the third step that happens is that we need to come into harmony or into synchronicity with it to step into that same flow. And then when we do that, when we align ourselves with it, when we become completely congruent with it, when we know that it's so, then that's what is how that happens. And it's just like when we put a seed into the ground and we water it, we know it's going to grow. I mean, we don't have to dig it up every day and look at it. We know it's happening. It's germinating under the soil. We expect it to grow. And we align ourselves with that manifestation process. And that is the creative process and how we create our desires and satisfy what our callings are in life. So then, if it would be all right, I'd love for you to change to the next slide, slide 5, which is Change Your Thinking, Change Your Life. And I have a little story to tell about that. Frank and I live here on a street right close to the university, and it's filled with young people. We've got two or three houses on the block that have a couple of oldsters like us on it, but something like 7 or 8 of the houses have 5 or 6 vibrant young 20-year-olds. And at first it was, you know, a little bit intimidating. There were all these young people bouncing around and making all kinds of noise. And, you know, if it's late at night and there's noise going on and you don't know who's making the noise, it can be a little intimidating. And so Frank and I decided to change the way we thought about that situation. And we created an affirmation for ourselves. And I forget exactly what it was, but it was something like, we live in a neighborhood that is full of loving and delightful people. We love all of our neighbors, and we live in a peaceful and quiet community full of respect and joy and honoring. And we posted that affirmation around, and we made the commitment to really change our thinking about it. And the very next thing that happened was some of the young people on the block, you know, we used to go around and sort of introduce ourselves with some, you know, pie or cookies or something, but then we decided to kind of clean up our act with sugar and flour and whatnot. So we started serving watermelon, and we started introducing ourselves to them and asking them to come over and treating them like you would treat any good neighbor that you love. And suddenly we found that we were surrounded by, you know, the cream of the crop here at Cal Poly is just some beautiful young people, intelligent and wonderful in every way. And our whole outlook changed. And then, you know, if there was noise and big things happening late at night, we would realize, oh, there's, yeah, that's so-and-so's voice. Oh, do you hear? That's Tommy. Or, oh, yeah, that's Susie. Listen to that. They're having such a good time. And they're doing exactly what young people should do. They're out, you know, flirting and playing and getting loud and boisterous. And with that change, our whole life and realization of our neighborhood changed. And you know how it is when you give respect, you get respect. And it's not the other way around. You don't get respect until you give respect. And when we gave our neighbors the respect of learning who they were and their names and what was important in their lives and sharing their lives with them, then our whole relationship here on the block changed, and it was no longer one of a, you know, borderline adversarial relationship. It became a much more loving, familial, family-like relationship. And so when we change our thinking, we change our life, and feeling is the key, holding those new thoughts with feeling. So now, if you wouldn't mind, maybe you can change to the 7th slide.
Sure.
Now, let's see, did we get that? Or I guess it's the 6th slide. It's the 6th
slide. Yeah, this is the one that's really speaking to your topic here.
Yeah, when we learn to love ourselves, we can follow our inner guidance right into our own true purpose. Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when we love ourselves, we will give ourselves what we really love and want the most. And surprisingly enough, what we really love and want from our true heart is what the world needs from us. And so when we love ourselves, when we are actually able to listen to our inspirations and follow them, the world really changes. And when we watch for synchronicities or let things catch our attention, the world really changes for us when we follow through those. Magic happens. As Joseph Campbell used to say, when you follow your bliss, when you stay in your joy like this, when you are giving to yourself what you would really love, doors will open for you where there would not even be a door for someone else. And that has certainly been the avenue of my life, especially of late. Because, you know, for so many years, I've never advertised. I've only done my work very quietly, you know, kind of low-key. it was all by word of mouth, and if I met new people, I often didn't say what I did because it's so peculiar after all. You know, you're a what? A medical intuitive? What's that? You know, well, it's a holistic health and healing, you know. So people would say, so what do? I'd say something like, well, I just finished painting the house, or, you know, something like that. Because it just was so odd and judgments were so swift. And rather than even go there, I just didn't. But when nature started talking with me, which it has done for quite some time with, but as I shared in the last program, especially when that hummingbird came to me and said, be seen, and when the plants said, you know, you've got to teach, you've got to get out there and teach this, then I decided to follow through with those, and my life has completely changed. And then, you know, magical things happen. Like I had a dear friend tell me, oh, you can't name your book that. It's a terrible name. And then that very night I'm coming home after that gathering and I'm saying to Frank, well, maybe she's got a point. You know, maybe this isn't the right name for the book. And then I come in and check my emails and there's your email there saying how much you love the name of my book and my website and how it's just great. You know, it was just such a great tee-hee from the universe, you know, to trust myself and go with it. So, Peace Pilgrim, who is one of my heroes, she wrote a beautiful book called, it's called Peace Pilgrim, Her Life and Work in Her Own Words. And she didn't actually write it. She just lectured as she walked across the nation for peace. She was inspired to do that. She had been walking out late at night looking for what her life purpose was. And she came into a clearing and she suddenly had an epiphany and knew that she needed to be a pilgrim and to walk for world peace. And she started her pilgrimage at a very troubled time in our history. It was right around the time of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and, you know, the world was looking very dangerous, and it still is. And she followed her calling in life, and she has a beautiful quote that she says. She says, to do all the good things that you are motivated to do, even if they are only small or little good things, and give these things first priority in your life, before and ahead of all of the mundane things of day-to-day living. And when we take action and follow our calling, we are really tuning into our inner guidance. And that is when we step into the magic of our lives. When we take action and when we respond to those callings, more inspirations and callings come. More synchronicities follow suit. And we learn how to trust ourselves. But in order to trust ourselves enough to do that, we have to first love ourselves enough to give ourselves the life that we truly love, the life of our desires.
I like this because it reminds me of the combination. When you love yourself, you trust yourself. So you're more, it's all tied together of trusting your guidance and following it, but if you're missing any of those components, love or trust or the ability to listen, then you're not able to follow. And I like what you said before, too. You used the term the universe, and oftentimes I think that what we think are our ideas are the ideas of the universe working through us, and the reason that when we take action on them, they happen and manifest when we're in alignment with them is because that is the energy that brought us the idea in the first place. And so if we align with it, it's already there. It's already existing. We're just opening to what's already there. That's my sense. What is your sense about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Beautifully said. Yeah, so I couldn't agree with you more. So let's go on then to the seventh slide, which is another one. It says, when we are in our joy, we are one with the divine and all that is. And, you know, Houston Smith, he wrote an amazing book called The World's Religions. And he was teaching in the universities in the 50s and 60s and 70s, I believe, as well. And, you know, introduced things like yoga to the American public. It was like, what? And his book is a wonderful read for anybody who has an interest in spirituality. The World's Religions is what it's called. And his name is Houston Smith. And he speaks of the three types of prayer. And of course, there is the asking prayer, like, help me. Dear God, help me. Or, you know, to pleading to the universe to help, for help. Wonderful one that my friend Jana taught me was, angels here now, is a sort of a help me prayer. And then there is the prayer of gratitude, which is one of the richest prayers we can pray. When we are in our gratitude, we are so centered in the divine and in that aspect of ourselves. And I've heard it said, and I really think it's true, that gratitude brings more blessings. And making a practice of gratitude in our lives alone can open us up to our inner guidance. Some people have kept gratitude journals or will take the morning and do morning pages and write gratitudes down, what we're grateful for. And sometimes it can just be, I'm grateful for having my hands and legs. You know, sometimes we can't think of anything we're grateful for, but we can be grateful that we have a nose or something like that. And he speaks of the third type of prayer. So there's the asking prayer, the prayer of gratitude, and the third type of prayer, which is the prayer of silent union with the divine. And when I first heard him speaking of this, I thought of what that felt like. What could that feel like? And I remembered being a little tiny girl, maybe 4, 5, or 6 years old, and my parents took me to the ocean. And I remember splashing and playing in the gentle little waves that were there that day. And I completely lost all sense of myself, and I was just in complete and total bliss, just jumping and splashing and squealing and screaming. And I think that happens also when the artist is completely lost in their creative process. Maybe they've got paint splattered all over the place, and they're just going at it, and they lose a sense of self, or a cook, somebody who's really cooking, or even... And we used the example of a plumber last time. You know, a plumber who's just right in there. They love their work and they're deep in it. You know, we all have purpose, and it can be in any number of places. Or someone who's playing the piano and lost in that. Or a surgeon who is deep in his or her work and helping to save a life or to restitch tendons and ligaments back together from an injury. Or taking out something that is causing problems for somebody. We can find our bliss and our joy and our divine purpose and our service to humanity. We can find our calling in any number of places. And when we are in our joy, we are one with the divine and all that is. So, and then I think, why don't we go to the last slide there then, which is my little interpretation of Joseph Campbell's beautiful saying, follow your bliss, which is stay in your joy. And that's what I like to ask people to do, if they can, at all possible. Your joy is like a direct compass into the truth of your life, into your purpose. If you can find and stay in your joy, you're where you need to be. Then you are serving the world in the way that you alone were meant to serve. And so we'll just leave that with that last slide, and maybe this is a good time for us to take any questions that might be out there.
Oh, great. So sweet. You just really have a way of bringing through this information with such grace and tenderness and compassion. I almost feel myself slipping into an altered state of just being very relaxed, and now I must pay attention, right?
Great.
All right, now let me take a look and see what we have for a question on the webcast.
Great.
I don't have a name with this question, but it says, I have a cat that's almost 20 years old. This isn't really related to the topic, but I'll share it with you, and you can decide, Josephine, how you want to answer it. And she's had a hard time with her bowels. And bowel movements, the doctor has suggested pumpkin.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, constipation can be a big problem for cats and for anybody. A healthy bowel is the way that we remove toxins from our bodies. And we also remove them through the kidneys, and also the liver cleans our blood and then exits a lot of the toxins that are cleaned out of the blood from our metabolic waste from our cells into the colon. And if there is constipation, that is a pretty severe problem. And we had a little kitty that was surprisingly constipated. She was the, I think she was the eighth in the litter, and her sister was born without an anus. And she had an artificial anus temporarily created for her, but she didn't live very long, her sister. But this little kitty that we got has also had problems with her colon and her bowel, I think just probably because the mother cat was alone on the streets during her pregnancy and probably hungry and was a little malformed herself. And so with this little kitty that we have, what we did was we looked into a book called The Cat Herbal, and she, the author there, said that we could go ahead and use senna leaf tea. That's S-E-N-N-A. And I took just a little tiny bit, like maybe a quarter of a teaspoon or a half a teaspoon of senna leaf, and put it in a nice clean coffee cup and or tea mug. And added some boiling water and let it steep a little bit. I added maybe, I don't know, a half a cup of boiling water and let it steep a little bit. And then I mixed that senna tea into her food. And lo and behold, she had a bowel movement right after that. And we made a change in her diet so that she wasn't getting as much grain. In fact, she's now on all meat because cats are obligatory carnivores. And so she eats a lot of raw meat, like, you know, hamburger and chicken, turkey burger, and also we get them raw thymus, which is sweetbreads. And that with the senna leaf has created a nice normal bowel habit for her. And so I just mix that senna leaf tea, maybe a couple of teaspoons or maybe a tablespoon into her food, and she regularly has her bowel movements. So she just needs a little help with it because her organ is a little differently functioning. And so that's what I did, and maybe that would work for you. But you'd have to listen within to your own guidance to find out what's right for you, for your kitty. I hope that has answered your question.
Thank you. And whoever asked the question, if you want to type in and let us know if that was helpful, that would be great. I have another question from Karen. She says, how do you stay in your joy when you haven't had an experience of joy in childhood?
That's a very good question, Karen, and that's a real deep learning, isn't it? And I do feel like I was very blessed to have had a large amount of joy in my childhood, but not everybody is similarly blessed. And some of us, my darling husband included, have had very difficult childhood experiences. And so these are things that require, you know, our patience with ourselves and our forgiveness of ourselves for having, you know, had those experiences. And it's not easy to find your joy when you haven't had much experience with it. But it can still be done. And with some of my friends and others that I know who have had extremely difficult childhood experiences, if we take the time to think back and to really remember our lives, we can sometimes surprise ourselves by finding something that was joyful. It's sort of like what I was speaking about with gratitude earlier, about how if we just can't find anything to be grateful for, we can think, well, at least I have my nose, you know, or at least I have my hands, or at least I can turn on a light switch and lo and behold, there's light. Or I can be grateful for my bed, or I can be grateful for my feet. And similarly, if we search, we can find things that have brought us joy. A wonderful way to find our joy is just through the very great blessing of our comedians, you know, the wonderful, great Jonathan Winters just passed away. He brought a whole change to comedy in the world. He brought spontaneity and creativity and improvisation and just did amazing things and used to make me laugh and laugh when I was a young person. And laughter is a part of joy. And so just getting started with something, you know, if you really can't think of anything that makes you joyous, just turn to something that can make you laugh. and find a way to find your joy there. And then sometimes when things are looking really bad, you know, it's not a bad idea to do something like get a dog. You know, dog spelled backwards is God. And dogs love you no matter what. They love us so unconditionally. We can kick a dog and, you know, kick it outside or whatever, you know, toss it out. They'll come back, oh, it's you again. And if you can't have a dog, then they so desperately need help and volunteers at the various shelters. Locally, we have Woods Humane Society, which is a wonderful place. Or you might be able to find joy by just going to, you know, to a beautiful place and looking out into the beauties of nature. Perhaps it's looking out over water like the ocean or a lake or sitting by a gurgling stream. We can find joy in nature if we let ourselves. The beauties of a flower or the song of the birds. Sometimes when I've been really blue, I'll just go out and listen for bird song, and before I know it, I'm smiling. And so it is difficult to find our joy when we haven't had it in childhood, but it still can be done. But these things take practice, and they take a willingness to change our thinking and to change our life that way.
Thank you. Great answer. I think, too, maybe just experiencing somebody else's joy, if you know someone who's experiencing joy, like a new grandchild or a new friend or a new job or anything, or just the joy of life, somebody who's really living that space, maybe try to experience what they're experiencing. That might be a way. If you have someone in your life that's had more experience with that, that might be one way to tap in.
That's a great idea, Cindy. It's really true. We do harm, you know, I think Rumi said, be with those who help your being.
Mm-hmm.
Be with those who help your being. And that's a wonderful way for us to do it. When we hang out with people who are negative, we get more negative. When we hang out with people who are positive, we get more positive. And we can pattern ourselves after those who are joyous, and we can step into harmony with them and learn joy from our friends. In fact, usually we are attracted to people who have qualities that lie dormant in us that we would love to develop. And so being with people who are joyous is a great idea.
I remember a quote that made me laugh once and said, if you hang out at the barbershop long enough, you're bound to get a haircut. So sort of like, you know, the energy that you spend your time in is what you'll eventually experience. And
yeah, that's really true. And a dear friend of mine said to me once, and I thought it was so profound, it's worth saying again and again, and she said that, you know, and she had a horrible, unbelievably horrible childhood experiences. And she said, you know, Josephine, if you want to look into the dark side, you can find more dark, horrible, absolutely awful things about the world than you could ever imagine would even be possible. And then she said, or you can look up and look at the light side, and you can see clearly in no time at all how amazing and beautiful the world is and how many great things there are that are happening out there in the world. And you can focus there instead. And so we need to remember to look up. And I have a T-shirt that has a picture of, it's from that Spirit Speaks magazine that I mentioned earlier. It has a picture of a man dancing with a dolphin and a frog and a fish and a bird and a cat. And they're doing the can-can. And it says, seeking enlightenment? Lighten up. And, you know, that's a it's a really wise bit of advice. You know, we have to really watch. We have to be careful with our thoughts just as we're careful with our food choices or anything else that we do. We have to be careful with our thoughts. We have to be careful with the company we keep. We want to, you know, mothers and fathers know this about their children. They want their children to hang out with people who are going to be encouraging the good aspects in their child rather than those that are maybe lying dormant that are not so good. So we want to remember to look up.
Great. I want to get to Carl's question here. So Carl's question, he says, hi, Josephine. How can one heal emotional trauma that is deeply ingrained in the psyche, the type that can attach itself to any fear or story that the mind makes up, the type of trauma that is stubbornly resistant to talk therapy or affirmations?
This is habit, and this is the subconscious mind, and it is true. It is resistant to affirmations, and it will latch on to anything that comes along. Our deep fears, you know, fear is very seductive, and it can really grab a hold of our minds and our hearts, and it can really plummet us down into the depths. But I like to remind people that love is stronger than fear, and we know this because, you know, if a mother has a child on the train track and the train is coming, she will happily jump in front of that train to save her child. She will not fear the train. She will express her love for that child. And we all know that. You know, we've seen people pick up a car off of that has rolled over a dog or a child or something. You know, we have no fear when we are really interconnected like that, when we really realize our interconnection. And but we do tend to have negative thought patterns that can spin around and around in our head, and fears and experiences from childhood. And usually it's our beloved subconscious mind that's trying to protect us. So as I mentioned earlier, my path has been injuries, and that has been my big teacher. And after one particularly difficult car accident that I was in, my subconscious mind, in an effort to take care of me and to protect me, kept bringing up the potential of all of these horrific injuries and accidents that could happen to me. And I decided that I really needed to change my thinking. And what happened was, if I would think something like, gee, I think I'll go out to the car and get my sweatshirt, I would imagine myself getting up off the couch, and this is no exaggeration, and I would see myself tripping over, you know, the dog's toy on the floor and landing face plant right into the floor. And that was my subconscious mind saying, you know, be careful, it's dangerous. My God, if you just try to do anything, you could hurt yourself. And so I'd think, no, I'm going to see myself getting up in my mind's eye and walking to the door without encountering injury. And sometimes it would take me 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 tries. And then I'd get to the door in my mind's eye, and I'd see myself walking out onto the front bricks, and then I would see myself stumbling over that little tiny step and landing and crashing and slamming my head into the edge of the brick walkway that has a little rise to it. And, you know, knocking myself unconscious. And I think, now, Josephine, you know, come on, let's try again. And so I would, you know, let that, you know, like on the stage of your life, you know, and the old vaudeville acts, they would get the shepherd's crook and they would drag a bad actor off the stage with the shepherd's hook. And I would see that in my mind's eye. I would see a shepherd's crook come and drag that thought off the stage of my life. Or I would see the Keystone Cops come out onto the stage like a vaudeville act and ride around on little tricycles and run that thought right off the stage. And then I would, you know, and so I haven't left the sofa yet. I'm still sitting on the sofa. I'm just trying to make it out to the car in my mind's eye to get that sweatshirt. And so I'd sit there and I'd think, okay, I can get to the door again, maybe without tripping or stumbling in my mind's eye. And I can get off the threshold and across the brick and down the little step. And then I'd see myself getting beyond the entry walkway to the sidewalk, and then, boom, some other major catastrophe, sprain my ankle badly by stepping on a little tiny stick that happened to be on the sidewalk, and twist my ankle and fall down and skin my knee and my elbow in my mind's eye. And it's like, no. We're going to go back. We're going to use our discipline and our willpower, and we're going to work on this. And I would just have to practice and practice. And then finally I could see myself getting out to the car, getting the sweatshirt, and walking back into the house without injury in my mind's eye. And then I would do it. I would get up and walk out to the car and get the sweatshirt. But these thoughts can be so almost subliminal, almost beneath our conscious awareness, these kinds of negative, deeply frightening thoughts. And I love what Louise Hay says. She says, in order to love ourselves, she says, we have to stop all criticism. She says, criticism never changes a thing. We have to refuse to criticize ourselves and accept ourselves exactly as we are. Everybody changes. When you criticize yourself, your changes are negative. When you approve of yourself, your changes are positive. So that's the first place to start, Carl. And then the second thing that Louise says in How to Love Ourselves is to, she says, don't scare yourself. She says, stop terrorizing yourself with your thoughts. It's a dreadful way to live. Find a mental image that gives you pleasure. And she says that hers is yellow roses. And immediately switch your scary thought to a pleasure thought. And that's where you and I were, you know, where we have found ourselves, me some years back and you right now, is that we're terrorizing ourselves with our thoughts. And we need to love ourselves, and we need to be kind and patient and gentle with ourselves, and to be patient with ourselves as we learn new ways of thinking, and to treat ourselves as if we're somebody that we really, really loved, to be kind to our minds. So Louise Hay has these beautiful little ways to help us getting through these kinds of hurdles that you find yourself in, Carl. And so I'd like to recommend and refer to you once again her book, You Can Heal Your Life, 40 million copies sold. That's not advertising. That's just a darn good book. So that's where I would like to recommend that you start with. And similar to our last question, too, you know, Louise had an unbelievably horrible childhood, and it had very severe repercussions in her adult life. And now, of course, she's in her 80s, and she's going strong, and she's still lecturing, and she's got a whole big, gigantic business and a publishing house, and, you know, she's made a fabulous turnaround in her life. And it's never too late to change. We can all change any time in our lives. And so lovingly release those old negative patterns. Find positive new ways to fulfill those needs, and you'll make it there.
Thank you. Thank you for your question, Carl. And I'm going to go back to the Stay in Your Joy slide as we take this next question from Caroline, and I believe this might be our last question, and I thank you for it, Caroline. It says, what about writing our affirmations on paper? Does this work better than just saying them?
Well, it does for me. I find that I'm a kinesthetic learner. I learn through the body movement, rather than audio, hearing, or visual seeing. And so when I take pen to paper, I learn much, much better than just hearing something or seeing something. So yes, is what I would say, and it just depends on the type of learner that you are personally. And but the main important thing is feeling. That is really the key, letting your feeling go in there. And saying your affirmations with as much gusto as you can muster, like my friend Lee, who says, I love my life and my life loves me.
I think a combination. And like you said, you have to understand what kind of learner you are and maybe even challenge yourself sometime. I know I'm very visual, but it's useful for me to write. Even though I can do my journaling on my iPad now, it's good to get a pen to paper and write because it uses a different part of the brain. And I do notice that it feels like a different quality of information comes through when I do it differently, when I do my journaling in that manner. So I love the question. I love the answer. It's been really helpful, all of the information. The questions that each of you bring forward really help bring and stimulate ideas, and the answers that come through Josephine will help everybody on the call by your questions. So I thank all of you who have contributed your questions.
Thank you so much, Cindy. What I would like to close with today is another beautiful blessing that I got from my dear friend Jana Massey. And she says this blessing, whenever there has been an exchange of energy, as we've done today, you've called in with your questions, and I've been able to give my thoughts on them. And so that blessing goes like this. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Beautiful. That feels really good.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing it. Jana has a lot of good blessings, isn't she?
Oh, my gosh. She was really something else. She was really an amazing teacher for us all. And Einar and Frank both experienced her beautiful blessings, and she brought us so much wisdom and so much wealth, really, in that regard, you know, a wealth of wisdom.
And if you resonated with Josephine like I do, please go to her website, again, stepintomagic.com, and let her know you'd like to be on her mailing list, and that way you can follow her on all the offers that she's putting forward to invite you to participate. Thank you all. Have a wonderful evening. We appreciate your presence. Good night.
All right. Good night, Cindy. Thank you.